The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is, of course, Thursday, July 2nd. If you're watching this on YouTube, you may notice that in each of these days, I'm wearing the same shirt. That's quarantine life, kids. Or we recorded them all the same day. You decide. My wife would tell you that it was the same shirt. And if you want to watch all these shows on YouTube, you can do that. We have a Pick Six Podcast YouTube channel. You can subscribe to it. Go to @PickSixPod on Twitter or @WillBrinson on Twitter. And we've tweeted out the links. If you listen to the show and you like the show, please go subscribe, because the more subscribers we get, the better it is for all of us. Also, you can download, rate, and review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you download and leave a 5-star review, you can ask us any question and we will answer it on Mailbag Mondays. We have a kicker and punter podcast coming up on Saturday, because why not? Happy 4th of July. Here's a kicker and punter podcast. And tomorrow we have tight ends with Cody Benjamin. You can check out our top 10 quarterbacks with Sean Wagner McGuff in the feed, top 10 running backs with Patrick Walker. Have a little heat on that podcast. And now to do top 10 wide receivers, the one, the only, Jared Dubin. Dubes, what's up, buddy?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you doing?
I'm great. Can't complain. Wearing the same shirt for 4 days in a row. We were talking before.
I would expect nothing less.
We were talking before the pod that I've been watching a lot of 30 Rock lately, and I've already rewatched The Office. I've rewatched The Office. I've rewatched Parks and Rec, and I've rewatched Community. Now I've moved on to 30 Rock because I realized it was on Hulu. Which out of all those shows? Like those, like the Office area shows, which one is your preference?
Parks and Rec is my favorite show of all time. So it's definitely that one.
I think Parks and Rec is, I'm in the middle of watching 30 Rock, so it's like hard to say, but like, I definitely think that the Office is at best, third for me.
I'm not sure where I'd have it. I mean, Mike Schur is probably my favorite writer, and obviously he was one of the big writers on The Office. He was the co-creator, I guess, of Parks and Rec, co-creator, yep. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, co-creator, or just
I think
creator
you can tell when he leaves The Office, like when he leaves, like when he left the show to go do other shows, or did he do it all the way through?
I think he did it all the way through, then he did Parks and Rec, or I don't remember, or actually no, because Parks and Rec was on at the same time The Office was on, so he had to have left at some point. I mean, the Office drops off when Michael leaves, which is, you know, pretty obvious. Right. Yeah, I mean, those shows are all great, though, and I'm always in the midst of a rewatch of one of them, too. So, yeah, it's a good time.
Did you know that Michael Schur is married to Regis Philbin's daughter?
I did.
I did not know that.
I think he's talked about it on, like, somebody's podcast before.
That makes sense.
And she's a TV writer also. She wrote for, like, The O.C.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I might need to go rewatch The O.C. Schur also did the Good Place, which is pretty good on ABC as well. It's a very entertaining show. All right, so anyway, that's our random tangent of the day, Thursday, July.
There will be no more tangents, I guarantee it.
Oh, yes, there almost certainly will be. I got to ask you this because we can't talk about these podcasts without asking whether you got heat for your wide receiver list.
Not really. Like the only thing was like a Bucks blog was like, why are, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin not number one and two? Like not actually saying that, but they didn't think Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were high enough.
What Bucks blog was it?
I don't remember.
The Joe Bucks fan?
I just said I don't remember.
Are you dismissive of the Bucks blogosphere?
I don't remember which one it was. I just remember seeing it. Other than that, I mean, that was really the only pushback that I got. Everything else was like, not that Interesting. Like, yeah,
Patrick Walker got lit up for his running back rankings.
Yeah, I saw the running back rankings. I think I would have had some pushback on some of those too.
Yeah, maybe not having Alvin Kamara in the top 10 will do that for you.
Yeah, I mean, I know his rationale, but like he's been a part-time player his whole career and still been one of the most productive running backs in the league. So
yeah, what are you going to do? All right, let's get to the wide receivers.
Yep.
Mentioned Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They both land in the bottom five of your list. But the guy at number 10 is really interesting, I think, because there's a non-zero chance that he would go from 10 to 1 as early as next year, Odell Beckham. I think if you rewound 3 years, we're like, hey, Odell Beckham would be the 10th best wide receiver in football. People are like, are you high? Like, what would be the 10th best wide receiver? He's number one.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't think if we rewound 3 years that we would see one of these lists without Antonio Brown on it either.
Fair point.
A lot happens in 3 years. I mean, Odell, just on pure talent alone, he's probably like a top two or three guy in the league. The issue for him the past few years has just been he hasn't been able to stay on the field. And when he has been on the field, he hasn't been that healthy. Like last season, he played all year with a hip injury, which, you know, I know from experience is really, really debilitating. And it just affects the way you move and it affects your entire life. Like it's all you can think about is how much pain you're in when you have that kind of an injury. And I mean, over the past 3 years, he's just had, you know, dreadful quarterback play from Eli Manning and then Baker Mayfield. And still during that time, like on a per 16 games basis, he's been incredible. I mean, 88 catches for 1,200 yards and 6 touchdowns per 16 games over that 3 year span. The issue is he's only played 32 of 48 games, you know? So I think if he can stay on the field and if he gets actual competent quarterback play from Baker Mayfield this year, then he can be, you know, a top five, top three guy again, but it's hard to, you know, 100% count on that. So I tried to sort of split the difference in terms of his talent level and what we can expect from him just based on whether or not he'll be on the field and whether or not he'll get good quarterback play. But I think he should be good if he's out there. And if Baker, you know, I would think we'll see him be closer to his 2018 self than 2019, just because, you know, they don't have Freddie Kitchens there and they improved their offensive line a bit and they should be in 12 personnel more often after signing a couple tight ends. Like it should be more conducive to offensive success for them this year.
I would think that Kevin Stefanski, who I am going to be say this is a bold claim, I think he might be a better coach than Freddie Kitchens. I would expect that Kevin Stefanski knows that the best way, like there's a really easy solution for the struggles with Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield. Throw slants. Like just do what Pat Shurmur did and Ben McAdoo did. Like just slant it to Odell Beckham off play action over and over and just let him jailbreak a couple of plays.
Get back to like those RPOs that they were doing with Baker in 2018. Yep. And just have Beckham, you know, lined up in the slot and run a slant. And all of a sudden, if they're playing cover one, cover zero, like he's gone. Like it's over.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where Baker's at his best too, is, you know, quick reads based off of, you know, what a linebacker or safety does and just throw it to the guy who is going to be open based on that decision.
Yeah. I am buying a lot of, or I'm planning on buying a lot of Odell Beckham, in fantasy this year. Like, I think he's just a great, I think his price tag is just surprisingly cheap. And I think that you can get a good value with him with a ton of upside with a Browns team that I think will be better, but I'm scared to get too hyped up on because they're.
Yeah. I went all in on the Browns offense last year in my big money league for fantasy. I took Odell.
But you had Chubb at least, right?
No.
So not all in. Almost
no. I took Odell and Baker. And David and Joku late as like one of my tight ends. So it did not work out for me.
Nah, it did not. All right. Number 9, Chris Godwin. You mentioned Bucks receiver. Did you think about having him higher or was it? Cause I think a lot of people would take Chris Godwin over Mike Evans, who you have at 7. You know, we'll just go and get these two Bucks guys out of the way. Keenan Allen at 8 as well. Was there any thought about flipping them there? I mean, I'm fine with Evans over Godwin, but I think a lot of people might take Godwin ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to combine sort of the not just do what we expect from them this season, but also like just the talent level as well. And I think it's definitely possible that Chris Godwin has a better season than Mike Evans, but I think Mike Evans is just the better player. Like he does more, I think. You know, Chris Godwin last season was in the slot on 67% of his routes. Mike Evans is there much less. He's winning outside and inside more often. He, you know, he is more of a deep threat than Godwin as well. The issue with Evans has been drops on occasion. He has like a 6% drop rate or something like that, which is one of the highest in the league. And obviously, he hasn't necessarily had a very high catch rate. Some of that is because, you know, he does get deeper targets down the field, and those are naturally going to be caught less often than targets closer to the line of scrimmage, which is where Godwin does more of his work. But he's also had, you know, Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm trying to remember who else they've had at quarterback there during his career. It hasn't been good. You know, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown, like, is that really the kind of quarterback play you'd expect to have a guy produce like a superstar with? Not necessarily, but he has done that. You know, a lot of it is volume because the Bucs have had to throw a lot more than a lot of other teams. So, you know, that's why, you know, when we get to talking about Amari Cooper versus Mike Evans in a little bit, that was sort of where the decision came down there. But, you know, Evans and Godwin, I mean, I wrote this in the piece, like, for me, the top five was pretty set. And then after that, there was a group of guys from like 6 to 16 or 17 where you could have put them in pretty much any order and I wouldn't really have argued all that much with you.
Who was your, who's your 11th guy on here?
I don't know that there was necessarily one guy at 11, but I had,
or who are your biggest snubs, I guess, like the
yeah,
toughest guys.
Stephon Diggs, Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Tyler Lockett.
Man. Great group of wide receivers.
Yeah, and you're right. I didn't really know what to do with Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
Like, 2017 and 2018, he was so good. Obviously, 2019 was kind of a disaster for him, and a lot of that is based on the quarterback play. But then we look at other guys on the list, and, like, Allen Robinson has literally never had – above average quarterback play in his entire career.
It is not just his entire career. Also Penn State, he had Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah. And he's been like significantly better throughout his career than Juju was last year. You know, we'll get to DeAndre Hopkins later on. He had disastrous quarterback play before hooking up with Deshaun Watson, and he was still able to be dominant. I mean, we just talked about Odell has had horrendous quarterback play the last 3 years.
And like the thing with Juju too, is that it wasn't just that he got back, like Ben went down. He moved from being like almost a primary slot guy when Antonio Brown was there into being like the true number. And like, you know, defenses are keying in on Antonio Brown. They don't have to worry about other, you know, Juju's a secondary concern. Like that was part of the problem, is like as he sort of became the guy, we didn't know. We didn't know how he would react to being the guy. And it combined with bad quarterback play makes it tough, and injuries. I mean, it's just a tough spot for him.
I mean, I think I lean more to the quarterback play and the injuries being the cause, just because, like, even in 2018, I think he out-targeted Antonio Brown. So it's not like he was, you know, a secondary option in that season. He was so good that year. And I think that if Ben is healthy, you'll get back to seeing Juju being really good again. But I just didn't really know what to do with him. So he was sort of like – him and A.J. Green were kind of the next two guys after that group of six that I just didn't really know what to do with.
But A.J. is tough, too, because it's like, are you going to throw – Odell Beckham, was AJ even a consideration for top 10? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, him and Juju were the guys that I didn't really know what to do with after that group of six. Like, they were sort of in that mix too, but I was like, I think I was going to put, like, Stephon Diggs on there before I was going to put AJ Green on there.
Yeah.
Just because we don't know. Like, especially even with if a foot it's, injury even for a list, wide receiver.
Even tough. If it's a list for 2020, like, Prisco had AJ Green on his top 100. It's like, man. Like,
and he didn't have Tyler Lockett or Kenny Galladay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I didn't understand that. We talked about that, on the last podcast I was on. There's a lot of, I think, deference to older guys that have done it before and have a track record, which is good. Like, you don't want to look stupid and be like, oh, A.J. Green's not a top 10 wide receiver, and then he comes out and goes for, like, 90, 1,208 again, because that's just what he does. But I just didn't really know what to do with him and Juju at a certain point.
No, it's tough, and I don't know that there's somebody on here that I would have taken off for one of those guys. So I'm with you there. I don't know though, like, you got Amari Cooper at six. Actually, you know what? We actually did what happens to Keenan Allen in real life. We just completely glossed over Keenan Allen, which is unfair because Keenan Allen has really morphed into an awesome receiver. Now, I wonder, Remember, he had that injury-prone label when he started out in his career. I do wonder, will Keenan Allen thrive as – like, I don't know that he will be here next year because of the shift from Phillip Rivers to Tyrod Taylor and because of maybe the emphasis on the run for this Chargers team. Like, I just wonder if he might fall off, not because he played poorly, but just because of the circumstances conspiring against him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they're going to be super run heavy. It's not like – I think really? Austin Eckler has more than 15 carries in a game like twice in his whole career, and it's not like Justin Jackson has been like a huge volume guy at any point either. But the thing with Tyrod is he's a very conservative passer and tends to throw close to the line of scrimmage a lot. So I think that that still works in Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler's favor. They're still going to be the top two guys in this offense. You know, maybe Allen doesn't get 160, 170 targets again, but I think he's still going to be, you know, the number one guy and targeted more than anybody else. I think it affects, you know, Mike Williams and Hunter Henry significantly more than it does Keenan Allen. So, I mean, you look at him the last 3 years, I mean, 102 for 1393 and 6, 97 for 1196 and 6, and 104 for 1199 and 6. I mean, he might be the most consistent player in the entire league when he's on the field. He has, you know, an incredible catch rate. He doesn't have, you know, necessarily.
He shreds man coverage too.
Oh yeah. I mean, he might be the best route runner in the entire league. I mean, the dude is always open, you know, incredible efficiency in terms of his catch rate, yards per target, yards per route run. Like, and I think that he's still going to get a pretty good amount of volume. Like, I don't know that the Chargers are necessarily going to throw like less than 500 times this year or something like that. Like, that would be crazy. That's not something that happens
in the modern NFL, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Allen too, like, remember, you know, cause he, in 2016, he tore his ACL in that week one game against the Chiefs. And he was a beautiful,
I don't remember which corner was there at that point, but he had like seven catches.
It was Marcus Peters, I think.
Was it? Was 17, 18, 19.
So 16?
Might have been Marcus Peters.
It could have been Marcus Peters.
Or it could have been whoever their number one corner is.
He was thrashing somebody who's a really good cornerback for the Chiefs in that week one game. And it was like, whoa, like this is Keenan Allen's breakout season coming.
And that was after he had missed the last 8 games of the previous year because he had like a lacerated kidney.
Yeah. That's right. And then he tore his ACL and he was taken off and then came back in 2017. But you're right. Those last 3 years, just extremely consistent in terms of his production. At number 6, Amari Cooper. A little surprised that you have Amari Cooper over Mike Evans. I think you probably thought about flipping that, right?
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, I had them flipped, I think, but then I just was looking at all the efficiency numbers. And since Cooper has been in Dallas, he basically has the same, like, typical season long line as Mike Evans, but on like 25 fewer targets per year. Like, for his
Mike
career,
Evans has never been hyper efficient.
No, like for his career, Evans averages 82 catches for 1,291 yards and 9 touchdowns per 16 games. He's only missed like something like 3 or 4 games, I think, for his career.
He has a 55% catch rate for his career. That's
not great. And again, a lot of that is due to the quarterback play, but you know, since he's been in Dallas, Cooper has played in all 25 games, but he did leave that Jets game last year after 3 snaps, but still he's averaging 82 catches for 1,225 yards and 9 touchdowns on a 16 games basis since he's been in Dallas in essentially a season and a half. So again, he has been Mike Evans, but on 25 fewer targets per year, significantly higher catch rate, 67%. You know, his yards per catch average is like 0.9 yards less, but he's been much more efficient on a per route basis, 2.24 yards per route run. And that holds true even if you take out Evans's first season where he was like the co-number one option alongside Vincent Jackson rather than just being, you know, the straight up number one guy that he's been over these past few years. I mean, a lot of the perception of Cooper, I think, is still sort of tied to that last year and a half or so that he had in Oakland. And it was straight up, it was bad. And he had like a case of the dropsies when he was in Oakland too, 6.4% drop rate, but he's cut that to 4.6% in Dallas. And I mean, when you look at this coming season too, I think everything is set up for Amari Cooper to have probably his best season this year. Like, they're going to throw the ball more often because they have Mike McCarthy there instead of Jason Garrett. They're going to throw more on early downs, which, you know, tends to be a much more efficient proposition than throwing on third down. He's going to play in more space than he ever has because he's got Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb there. They're just going to be in 3 and 4 wide receiver sets more often than he's ever been in his career, which results in a more spread field. And he's just had such good chemistry with Dak Prescott too. Like, I think this is going to be his best year. And I think that, you know, Mike Evans is still going to be like more of a co-number one guy along with Chris Godwin. And I think Tom Brady throws short more than he throws deep. He's not going to suddenly start throwing deep, you know, 6-7 times a game.
Godwin sets up as a much better target for Tom Brady than Mike Evans.
Yeah. So sort of the combination of like Cooper has essentially been Evans since he's been in Dallas production wise. And I think that he's got, you know, a little bit of an edge just in terms of what we can expect his production to be this season, because, you know, even though the Cowboys don't necessarily have the exact coaching continuity that, you know, Godwin and Evans have with Bruce Arians, like, they're getting a new quarterback there.
I think for that, for purposes of continuity, like, I think the quarterback, in terms of receiver continuity, I think the quarterback's right. More important than the coach.
Right. And it's so, you know, the Bucs are changing their quarterback. They're tweaking their offense a little bit. At least that's what Arian says. We'll see what happens. You know, the Cowboys obviously have the same quarterback, and yes, they changed the head coach, but they kept the offensive coordinator from last year, who was also the quarterback's coach 2 years ago. And McCarthy has said that, you know, Kellen Moore is still going to call the plays, and they're keeping the same terminology. So even though they are tweaking the offense a little bit, there's not as much of a difference as you would expect with a typical first-year head coach.
Just going to take out the Jason Garrett. They'll just get rid of Jason Garrett, and it'll be better. Cooper. The only thing with Cooper, so he has 17 career games with 20 or less receiving yards.
Yes.
He has 4 games where he's been completely blanked. He has 58 games where he has under 100.
One of them was last year, too. Stephon Gilmore blanked him, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was against. It was, and that was bad weather too. So, like, you know, we'll cut him.
And
a
they
bit.
Also like threw the ball 20 times or something. Like, ugh, Jason Garrett. The less I have to talk about him for the rest of my life, the better.
I mean, he has. I mean, it's just weird. Like, he just has these games where, because he has 3 career 200 games. You know, 2 more where he's above 170. He's a little bit of boom or bust to him. I think would be the only maybe qualm about having him all the way up at 6.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case. There's no real pushback you can make about that. He definitely is a lot of times a boom or bust player. But, you know, just in terms of efficiency, like on his, you know, per route, per target, per game, per catch, like all the efficiency metrics are there. I'm not sure that the game-to-game consistency is necessarily something that causes me to say, you know, he's 11th or whatever. Although if you had him 11th, I wouldn't really argue. Like I said, I think that there was a group of, you know, 10 or 12 guys where, like, you could have put Stephon Diggs 6 and had Amari Cooper off the list, and I wouldn't have argued with you.
Did we mention Adam Thielen? Did he get any possible love?
He was in sort of that next group of guys tier. After that. Like, he definitely took a step back behind Diggs last season. Some of that was the injury, obviously, that he had last year, but he also had sort of taken a step back even before the injury. He's always done his best work in the slot, and they're already talking about using Justin Jefferson in the slot more often, which means Thielen's going to have to push outside. So, I mean, he's obviously really, really good, but I didn't necessarily have him in this group of guys in the top 16, 17 or whatever.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about your top 5 wide receivers.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, so top 5 wide receiver on on your list, Dubes. This is, and you've mentioned, you've referenced it several times. I think it is, I think it's pretty easy picking out these five names. Now it gets a little bit harder when you've got to, you know, figure out where they go. But for me, actually selecting the top five wide receivers is easy. That seems fair, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of where it was for me. I definitely noticed like, not necessarily a drop off, but a break in terms of the, you know, the relative level of eliteness, I guess.
Well, like, I don't think anybody is going to – so at number five, you have Devontae Adams. Nobody's going to tell you to take Amari Cooper over Devontae Adams. Like, that's not up for discussion, I don't think, right?
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think that there might be some people just on, like, pure talent level. They might say, like, you know, Mike Evans or Odell Beckham or, you know, any of the other guys maybe. But just the combination of Adams' production since he's been in this role that he's been as the number one wideout, you know, it's been – four seasons. He's played 57 of 64 games and average line 96 catches for 1,197 yards and 11 touchdowns.
Like, yeah.
He's, what do you do with that?
He's double pretty digit good.
Touchdowns in three of those four seasons. Last year was the only one where he didn't get to double digits because he was injured for a bunch of the games. I mean, the year he had in 2018 was like one of the most underrated wide receiver seasons ever. Like, 111 for 1386 and 13. The only other guys that have ever done that are Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Antonio Brown, Isaac Bruce, and Herman Moore.
That's a pretty good list. Herman Moore, sneaky on there.
And he did it in only 15 games, too. He didn't play the last game of the year. I mean, he's also just like probably the clearest number one target in the entire league because the Packers, like me and you, might be the next two wide receivers on the team somehow, and they didn't add anybody this offseason. Like, Adams might get like 185 targets this year.
Yeah. I mean, he could be like, they win. Cause remember the draft, everybody's pissed off at the Packers cause they didn't add anybody. And so, yeah, I mean, like he could easily end up with a ton of targets. How high did you think about moving Adams? Like what was his ceiling for you in this list?
Probably three. Like, I think one and two, I was debating between those two, and then 3, 4, 5, I was debating between those three.
Okay, so Adams was not a consideration for one or even two?
No, I don't think so. I mean, just in terms of, like, yards per route run and catch rate and things like that, like, the top two guys are just on another level, I think. And then it was the next three, and then a group of us, like I said, like 10 or 12.
Right, so at 3 and 4 to fill out that group, DeAndre Hopkins at 4, maybe a little lower than people thought, and then Tyreek Hill at 3, two very different stylistic wide receivers. Hopkins, of course, traded this offseason as part of the insane David Johnson move from Houston to Arizona, where all right, so let me ask you this. What do you think there was a decline in DeAndre Hopkins' play last year, or is there a decline in how he was used?
I think there was a big decline in how he was used. I wrote about sort of the top quarterback wide receiver tandems for a series of stories last season. And one of them obviously was on Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. And I mean, there were games where he was basically used like a running back. Like the game that they played against the Chiefs, I don't think he had a target that was more than like 7 or 8 yards in the air. And he had like 12 catches or something like that. And
he has like the best body control in all of football. And you're like,
oh yeah. I mean, his body control is ridiculous. The sort of defining feature that I had of him and Watson was like improbability, basically. Like, or no, it was degree of difficulty. Improbability.
Right. Yeah.
Wilson and Lockett. Like, you know, Watson has obviously been saddled with such a ridiculous degree of difficulty throughout his career just because of the offensive line that he's played behind. And, you know, sort of the regressive style of offense that they've used a lot of the time. And then Hopkins, like, look at his quarterback play for the first 4 years of his career. I mean,
it's like Tom Savage.
Yeah. I have the list here. Brock Osweiler, Brian Hoyer, Tom Savage, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Mallett, Case Keenum, Matt Schaub, TJ Yates, and Brandon Whedon.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's like, what did he do in his prior life to deserve having to catch passes from those quarterbacks? Then only to get Deshaun Watson, then only to get traded. Thank goodness he was traded to at least, you know, he gets Kyler Murray, who looks to be an ascending player. Did Hopkins get merit consideration at number one or in the top two, or is it just you need to sort of see how he looks in this new offense?
Yeah, I mean, it was 3, 4, 5 for him as well.
Okay.
I don't think I ever had him down at 5. I think at one point he was at 3, and then I flipped him I think he was at one point, he was three, Adams was four, and the guy I ended up putting at number three was at number five, and I sort of jumbled it up that way. I just think it's not necessarily because of anything regarding his skill set or anything like that. I think that the Cardinals are significantly more likely to spread the ball around than the other two teams that we're talking about here. I don't know that he has like a 180, 190 target season coming. Cliff Kingsbury's offense, they're going to have four wideouts on the field a lot of the time.
Yeah. What do you think? I'm curious what you think. Cause I was reading, I think it was Pat Daugherty's Roto-World Cardinals preview, and you could tell that, Kingsbury just couldn't get four wideouts on the field because they didn't have the guys. It's Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella.
Not even Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella, but Damir Bird and Trent Sherfield. These were the guys that they were running out there last year as they're number three and four wide receivers. So now I'd imagine, as long as they're healthy, I would imagine that Hopkins, Kirk, and Fitzgerald are going to be out there on 100% of snaps. And then you're going to have, a tight end, and on occasion you'll have Andy Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, one of those other guys that are going to be out there with them. And I do think, I don't think you're suddenly going to see Larry Fitzgerald with 80 targets, He's still going to wind up in the 100 target range. Christian Kirk will probably be around there too. Hopkins, 130, 140, 150, that range. And that just means to me he's going to be, just probably slightly less productive this season than the next guy we have on the list. And I think just in terms of talent level, I think they're pretty similar.
You mean Tyreek Hill?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Hill at, how are you handling Hopkins in fantasy then? Are you just worried they'll spread it out, just stay away, or?
No, I still think he's going to be, a top five or six wide receiver. I just wouldn't necessarily make him the first or second receiver off the board anymore, which I think I took him as the first receiver off the board in my fantasy league.
Yeah. And he was disappointing last year.
Yeah, he was still really good.
Yeah.
He just wasn't the best receiver in the league.
If you drafted him and Odell Beckham with your first two picks, you had a rough.
That's year. Exactly what I did.
Me too. I did that a bunch. Yeah. Tough.
I had him, Odell, and Baker. It's a two quarterback league. And him, Odell, Baker as my first three picks.
Oh, yeah, that's tough.
And my other quarterback was Jared Goff.
Fun year for you. You thought your team was stacked after that draft, too.
Yeah. I went in on the Browns offense, the Rams offense. And for the first time ever, I had a deep crew of running backs. Chris Carson, Mark Ingram,
Oh, no. So, good running backs, and then, the wide receivers didn't pan out, of course. All right, so Tyreek Hill, I drafted him last year, and he got hurt early on. Only 58 catches last year, 860 yards, but still 7 touchdowns. He's the fastest player in football and maybe the entire world?
Probably. I mean, Adoree Jackson might have something to say about fastest player.
Usain Bolt football. As well, maybe.
Yeah. No, I just meant in football. Bolt definitely has something to say about in the entire world. Bodie, what are you doing? Sorry, my dog is literally just sitting under my chair, and he clearly wants to jump up on me right now.
Bring him up.
Okay, you want to come
here? I'm wearing the same T-shirt 4 days in a row. You can put your dog on the screen.
Okay.
Debo will stop you if it looks bad. He looks like a Bodie.
Yeah.
It is Bodie, right? Not Brody.
No, Bodie. In 3 years as a full-time wide receiver, Tyreek Hill he missed the 5 games or whatever it was last year, but 82 for 13, 11, and 10 on a per 16 games basis. 2.45 yards per route run, which is just completely ridiculous. 16 yards per reception during that span, 6th best mark among players with at least 100 catches. During that time, he leads the league in yards per target. During that time, he has 10 receiving touchdowns of 50-plus yards. I mean, that's by far the most in the league. The next three guys are Cooper, Diggs, and DeSean Jackson. They all have 5 apiece.
Wow.
And he had 71 carries for 500 yards and 4 touchdowns in his career. Again, he's working with Patrick Mahomes. They are the best deep ball guys in the league, the best scramble drill guys in the league, unless you want to make an argument for Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett.
I take Mahomes, and I mean, it's perfectly fine with the argument, but I would personally take Mahomes and
yeah,
just I because know. Like as good as Lockett is when they're freelancing and all that, like he'll, if you can't cover him, you can't cover him. And eventually he's just going to get loose. And if he gets in space, you're touched. So that's, yeah, that would be my choice.
I think for him, similar to Amari Cooper, I think that it's all set up for Tyreek Hill this year to just have like an unheard of monster type of season.
Really? You think, yeah. Do you think like the, why do you believe that Hill will have an even better year?
Well, I think Mahomes is going to be out there for more than whatever it was, like 12 or 13 games that he was last year.
Because Hill was – Mahomes got hurt right as Hill came back. Because Hill caught a touchdown pass from Matt Moore in that Thursday night game, yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, for that reason, I think, you know, now it's going to be like, again, his fourth season as a full-time wide receiver. I think they're going to have more speed on the field than they've ever had, because I think you'll find, you know, Mecole Hardman probably taking more of those snaps from DeMarcus Robinson, where last year he was like a 15, 16 snap a game guy when Tyreek Hill was healthy. You know, obviously Travis Kelce's still there to draw attention over the middle. You know, they added, as much as I don't like taking a running back in the first round, even for this team, and even though he is a good pass catcher, they added like the best pass catching wide receiver, best pass catching running back in the draft in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There are just so many more threats everywhere. And Mahomes is only going to be better. Like, what is he, like 25 years old now, third season as a full time starting quarterback? I mean, yeah. I think like
Hill's only 25.
Season. Yeah.
Like Mahomes and Hill, I mean, assuming that Tyreek Hill doesn't do anything that gets him, you know, suspended.
Yeah, I mean, the only problems with Tyreek Hill are his behavior off the field and his, you know, attitudes towards women and apparently alcohol that causes him to have those attitudes. And obviously we don't 100% know what happened with his child, but there were some horrific allegations and he clearly needs to.
Suffice to say there are concerns off the field with Tyreek Hill, but if he avoids those problems, I mean, he has the skill set to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver and a quarterback who he's going to be paired with for the next 5+ years.
Yeah, I mean, if he's on the field, he's going to be the most explosive player in the league, probably.
That's actually an interesting test case for the Hall of Fame and their stance that off-field matters are not of import to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Like, I'll just be curious. Like, I mean, don't you think?
They claim to not care about off-field matters. Look, obviously, this player's off-field matters are in nowhere near the same league as Tyreek Hill's, but there is zero reason on any level that Terrell Owens shouldn't have gotten in on the first ballot. Yep. Clearly, the only reason was people didn't like, you know, that he did sit-ups in his driveway or whatever.
It wasn't even like stuff he did. It was just they don't like him. That's all that was. I mean, it's crazy.
They can claim they don't care about off-field stuff, but clearly they do. And it's not necessarily even about off-field stuff. It's just like your personality and were you like good to reporters.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so number one and number two, no-brainers. I mean, you did a great job, Dubin, with the teaser, not actually saying their names when I kept saying one and two over and over again. But look, you don't need me to tell you who they are. I mean, it's Julio Jones and Michael Thomas. The question is, which order are they in?
Yeah, it's Julio Jones at number two and Mike Thomas at number one. You could have flipped them and I wouldn't really argue with you that much. Again, like I said, I mean, the thing that sort of broke the tie for me has been, you know, Julio's, yards per reception and yards per target have both gone down each of the past three seasons and just over the last few years where Mike Thomas has been the number one guy, just like his targets turn into first downs, like a decent chunk more often than who. Okay, you can come back up. No?
Okay. By the way, make sure to check out the YouTube channel because you can see Bodie, Dubin's dog, sitting on his lap. I don't know what kind of dog I thought Bodie was, but I don't think that's exactly the. I don't think that's exactly. What kind of dog is he? Is he
he's a rescue, so I don't know 100%. But I mean, so he came actually with two different birth certificates. One said Chihuahua mix and one said mini pincher mix. So I know he at least has some of those in him. And that's, I mean, he has the look of both of those. So yeah. Anyway, so
he's very regal.
He
looks, Diva, back me up here. He looks regal on this podcast, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Based on previous descriptions, I was thinking Bodie was a pit bull or something based on Dubin's previous comments during the pod.
He looks sage. Like he's like, he's just, like, he's not distracted by the giant furball in the yellow shirt, like waving, gesticulating loudly. He's like sitting over there and he's just very, he seems very regal.
He likes to stare at stuff outside. He likes to, usually he likes to like play with the podcast equipment, which happens on occasion. And he just loves like jumping on people and dogs. Like when I walk down the street with him, basically every person that I walk past, he has to try to jump on. He's very social. But anyway, again,
my walkie-eyed friend George.
Yeah, Julio Jones and Mike Thomas. Yeah, I mean, Mike Thomas's targets have turned into first downs just like a pretty decent chunk more often. I think it was like 7% more often than Julio Jones over the past couple of years. And that seems like a pretty significant chunk. But, you know, Julio Jones, like the yards per route run king, like among wide receivers with 50-plus targets over the past 7 seasons, Julio Jones ranks 1st, 4th, 1st, 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 and 5th in yards per route run over the past 7 seasons.
That's ridiculous. I think – so here's where I would stand on the two, is that right now as we are where we sit in our place in – like heading into the 2020 season, given what Michael Thomas did last year, which was 149 catches, which is ridiculous – and 1,725 yards, 107.8 yards per game, and an absolutely obscene 80.5 catch rate, which was even higher the year before it came down. He was at like 97 or something too, that he would be, I agree with you. I think he would be one. Having said that, if you were like, hey, who's just the best, like, who's the biggest physical freak receiver out there? I think it's Julio.
Yeah, I mean, Julio Jones is like sort of like a Randy Moss style, like.
Absolutely.
You could say he's like the most talented receiver that you've ever seen. Like, I think Absolutely. He's up there for me. He's completely ridiculous. I mean, he has ridiculous size, like 6'3", 220. Like, he's good at everything. Like, he's, again, like.
He's crazy fast. He's a great route runner. He can high point a ball. Like, he's a red zone threat. Like, I mean, what did he run at the combine? Like a 4.3 with a broken foot? I mean,
something like that. I mean, the only difference is he's 31 now and he's not necessarily at the pure peak of his powers anymore. That doesn't mean that he's not still, like, again, I have him number 2 in the league, but Mike Thomas is what, 24, 25. He's heading into his peak years and Julio Jones, like, probably just.
Wait, no, Michael Thomas is 27. Is that right? How is that right?
He's 27?
He's 27.
Really?
He was drafted at 23. So, he was older when he came out of college. I think that's actually part of why he fell. Maybe because he was – Julio Jones, by the way, 4.34 at the combine with a broken foot.
Completely ridiculous. I mean, the guy's a freak. Like,
yeah. I guess what I'm saying, that's the difference. Is like I also thought Michael Thomas was 25. I didn't flinch. I just happened to have it up to see if his birthday had passed. You know what? Actually, I did know that because he was not on Sean's – list.
Oh, right. Top 2,500.
Yeah. Okay, makes sense. But yeah, I mean, like, and I think, what do you think about the criticism of Michael Thomas? Like, people are on Twitter, like, mad because he catches too many slants from Drew Brees. Like, I don't know.
Is that not good? Like
guard the slant.
Yeah. Like, so over the past, 3 years, 50.5% of his targets have resulted in first downs.
That's crazy. Like,
more than half the time you throw the ball to Mike Thomas, it's a first down.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And I wrote about the thing with the slants, in the quarterback wide receiver series. Like, basically it was like an 85% catch rate on those. And they averaged, you know, like 9 or 10 yards a pop. So it's basically like a running play that gains twice as many yards as the average running play.
Right. He had 91 first downs last year.
He's ridiculous. I mean, he has probably the best hands in the league. He's 6'3", 212, ridiculous strength, like elite change of direction skills. He wins at the line of scrimmage and then at the break and then at the catch point on like every route. Like, there's nothing that he's not good at. Like, he's even really good when he gets thrown the ball downfield. They just don't necessarily use him that way just because that's not
the way they want to use him. I think it's a Drew Brees thing, not a Michael Thomas thing.
Right. When they do throw him the ball down the field, he's ridiculously efficient. Yeah. It's just not necessarily as enormous a part of their offense because, like, if you can get a first down more than half the time you throw a guy the ball when you throw, you know, a slant or whatever, why not keep doing that?
Right. You don't need to do what what you know what I mean? Like you just keep banging that slant over and over again. Like that's the play to do it. Okay. What, is there anything we didn't touch on here?
No, I mean, again, I think that those six guys that I mentioned sort of really got a short shrift. Like I think you could have put any one of Stephon Diggs, Kenny Galladay, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Lockett, Allen Robinson, Robert Woods on this list. And Bodhi, get off my desk, please. You could have put any one of them on this list. And again, I wouldn't really have argued it. Like, especially, you know, Kenny Galladay based on, you know, what Matthew Stafford did last season. I think that he has a really good argument. If the Seahawks threw the ball, like as much as a team should throw the ball, Tyler Lockett would be on there.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Stephon Diggs, I think talent level wise is probably one of the 10 best, but he's about to go from a quarterback who he thinks didn't throw him the ball deep downfield enough to a quarterback who, let's just say he's not the most accurate quarterback.
He's going from the second most accurate quarterback in NFL history in terms of just completion percentage to, Josh Allen.
Look, I think Josh Allen took a step forward last year. He also was below average at literally everything a quarterback can do except avoiding interceptions.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's still got a couple steps forward to take, and maybe he takes them. I'm not baking that into my projection for Stephon Diggs.
No, I think that's not your job. Your job is to rank receivers. You know, it's not, your job's not to rank, not to bake in Josh Allen taking a leap and then look like an idiot.
I think that he probably should take, you know, a step forward. I don't know how big it'll be. Like it could be a small one. It could be, you know, a bigger one than he took last year. He could also go backwards. Like, you know, we didn't expect Baker Mayfield to regress last year based on like adding Odell Beckham and looking at, we thought an offense that was going to be even better for him than the one that Hugh Jackson was running the year before, but it didn't happen. So, you know, it's not 100% guarantee. Like, progression isn't necessarily linear. So we can't just say Josh Allen got better last year. He's going to get, you know, even more better this year. Certainly it could happen. I was not necessarily big on Josh Allen coming out of the draft. So I tend to be a little bit more skeptical.
I'm biased a little bit like that too, but no, I mean, like it's, and I do think the leap is there for Josh Allen, like the possibilities there, but it's not 100% certain that he will take a big step forward.
Yes, I don't know that he necessarily suddenly becomes an accurate quarterback. No. I think he can become a better decision maker. I think he can, you know, instead of trying to throw deep downfield, you know, 18, 90% of the time or wherever he was last year, you know, take that check down to Cole Beasley or Devin Singletary every once in a while and just move the chains a little bit. Like, There are things he can do better, and there, I think, are easy ways that he can improve. But I don't know that he's necessarily going to become a guy who completes 66, 67% of his passes. That's just not in his range of outcomes, I don't think.
I don't think so either. And to your point about Diggs is, like, if he's taking those checkdowns and he becomes a better decision maker, and the Bill, like, unless the Bills strangely become just a more voluminous offense, which I don't think is going to be the case – given that they use a fairly early pick.
The best thing Allen does is scramble. Like, that's like a big part of their offense and a big reason that he is able to have the efficiency that he does have.
Yeah. And I don't know how this turned into a Josh Allen podcast, but.
Well, we were talking about Stephon Diggs.
Oh, I know how it did, but
yeah. I think if, by the way, that either one of the two Rams wide receivers, could get their way back onto the list just because I think that offense should be better this year. Yeah. They're not going to force the ball to whatever running back is there quite as often as they did last season with Todd Gurley, just because the guy's name is not going to be Todd Gurley.
And they're not going to feel like they got to get their investment back.
Right. And just like, I think they figured some stuff out at least down the stretch in terms of beating like that 6-1 front that was, you know, dealing with the wide nine, type of, or sorry, the wide zone that they wanted to run.
Was it the Lions or the Patriots?
The Lions first broke it out. Matt Patricia broke it out. Then the Bears ran it again. And then obviously completely shut them down with the Patriots in the Super Bowl. But I think they figured some stuff out down the stretch of last season, just in terms of like getting a pitch to get those guys all the way on the outside. And then they could run 12 personnel more. I think they're more confident in Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett than they were last year. So they can mix things up a little bit more. And, without Brandon Cooks, that means Woods and Kupp are going to be on the field more often than necessarily they were before.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you want to hear some more about Tyler Higbee, tune in tomorrow because Cody Benjamin and I are going to talk Tyler Higbee. He might have made his top 10 tight end list.
So I have two bones to pick with these top 10 lists. Like, first of all, Tony Pollard should have been number one on the running backs list. Everybody knows it. Number one in elusive rating at Pro Football Focus last season. And, actually, that's my only bone to pick. Tony Pollard, number one running back.
See, Debo, another case. All right, you know what I'm going to do this afternoon? I'm going to plug in my sound drops because one of the ones I want is the Zeke. He's like, oh man, I'm so faded. you saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
And then he threatened to sue SI for accusing him of being high. He's like, no, lawyer, I'm drunk, damn it.
He was like, I'm going to call my lawyer. His lawyer's going to tell him in about 2 seconds that he doesn't have a case for defamation because he has not experienced any injury.
You're broadcasting yourself on Twitch, bro, and you clearly are faded.
But the guy said that he was high instead of drunk, which... who cares? Like, Zeke has not experienced any injury as a result of this, so there's no case here.
Right, exactly. All right, Dubes, great stuff as always, buddy. Make sure and follow him on Twitter at JADubin5, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, man. Bodie, you want to say bye?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or... I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.